from the studios of WAER.
And he's standing up into the goal line. Touchdown, Syracuse.
Battle gets a screen, pull up, he's good. Tyus Battle from 20 feet, and with 2.5 on the clock, Syracuse leads by one.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside. He scores the game winner. Give the assist to Don Madonna. Syracuse wins 11-10.
Comes the Ostrom Avenue podcast.
To Boeheim, quick trigger three from the top. He knocks it down, and we're tied at Spectrum Center.
15 left. He shoots and scores. Tucker Dornovic.
Perhaps the biggest upset in program history comes on Friday the 13th.
And now, your hosts, Brendan Mortensen and Owen Valentine.
Hey everyone, welcome back into the Ostrom Avenue podcast. We have been gone for a while. We're looking at this schedule, and the best thing to do today, we thought, was just to kind of run through the games that have happened since we've been gone, because we haven't talked about a game since Iowa. That was December 3rd.
It's been a good chunk of time, and to say the least, a lot has happened, some highs, some lows, and everywhere in between. So it'll be good to just kind of reset the roadmap before deep diving anything too specific and just kind of give you the gist and kind of figure out what Syracuse basketball has been kind of since the start of ACC play.
Some changes for the basketball team, some changes for the podcast as well. We've got a fresh face in here. Of course, I'm Brendan Mortensen alongside Owen Valentine. We're your regular two hosts. We're also joined by Ben Schulman, who's going to be joining us for the rest of basketball season. He's going to be taking over as co-host for lacrosse season once I'm out of here, and we're excited to have him on. Thanks for joining us, Ben.
Thank you for having me, guys. Really excited for the semester, and hopefully it's a great basketball season, so we're ready.
Well, if Virginia is any indication, then things might be looking up, but let's start way back at that first game that I mentioned, which was Georgia Tech, the offensive outburst featuring the one, the only, Elijah Hughes.
Hughes starts incredibly, and then Buddy Boeheim takes over in the second half. It was that perfect 1-2 punch that a lot of people were expecting a little bit more of this season, and they've seen it at times, but to that point, it didn't really exist. So it was nice to see Hughes really with that incredible, as you said, offensive outburst to start the game. It was one of the best I've seen him. It kind of got him back on the map, in my opinion, in terms of being a top-tier player in college basketball and in the ACC, and it really just showed his ability to score and his ability to light up and take over a basketball game.
Yeah, I think this was one of the few games this season, too, that Syracuse has actually out-rebounded their opponent. They had 40 rebounds opposed to Georgia Tech's 30, and you got 9 from Dolezal, 8 from Sidibe. That's not really what we're getting consistently, unfortunately, but when Syracuse is able to dominate the boards or even just hang in there, they seem to play much better, and I think that happened in this game for sure.
Rebounds are a funny thing. Let's go to Georgetown, because that's exactly what happened against this Georgetown Hoyas team down in D.C., an 89-79 loss to the Hoyas, and the rebounding numbers, bad is the word that I would use. Georgetown with 41 rebounds in that game, Syracuse with 29, and it didn't even feel that close. The two big things in this game, the rebounding numbers for Georgetown were absurd, and then you look at the free throw discrepancy.
Yeah.
Syracuse shoots 9 free throws in this game, goes only 5 for 9. Georgetown, 24 of 31.
Yeah.
This team got to the line at a ridiculous rate. You have Mack McClung going 9 for 10, Terrell Allen going 8 for 11, even Yurt Seven, the center, going 5 for 7, 5 for 8, if you count that free throw that he just randomly chucked up in the middle of 2 free throws that somehow didn't get called for a technical. I'm not mad about it anymore. Don't ask me. Ridiculous game on all fronts.
That one was a fun game because it felt like Georgetown completely blew Syracuse out. But because Syracuse just kind of lingered around at that 10-point margin, the score doesn't necessarily reflect it as much. Syracuse did not play a great basketball game. Their defensive scheme was atrocious in this game when you look at the amount of times Georgetown was able to get to the line. And Syracuse just really was not able to figure things out. They got beat terribly in the second half by Omer Yurt Seven, who they held in check for a large part of the first half. And then in the 2-8, she goes off for 15-plus points and just kind of shows one of the biggest weaknesses in that Achilles heel of Syracuse so far this season, and that's keeping opponents' bigs in check. They have not been able to do it. And yes, they've played a lot of really strong and really good bigs, top bigs in the conference, top bigs in the country, but they have not really been able to find any sort of scheme defensively that can fix that. Well, it's whether it's a help or something along those lines, or just Sidibe or Edwards or Dolezal playing a strong defensive performance. It's foul trouble game in and game out, and this was the perfect example.
Yeah, I just think that Syracuse a lot of the time is losing the battle in the paint, whether it's rebounds or whether it's free throws. In this game, Buddy Boeheim actually had an incredible second half. I think he scored all 25 of his points second half.
I don't think he had a point going into the second half.
Yeah,
and Elijah Hughes had 19 in the first half and then scores two in the second.
Yeah. Consistency might be an issue for this team, but I think sometimes, you know, with these budding three-point shooters that they have, they've kind of, you know, had this three-headed monster now of Boeheim, Hughes, and Joe Girard, but they forget a lot to attack. They're shooting a lot of threes, and they shoot confidently, but they forget sometimes that you go inside, you get free throws. Those are the easiest buckets that they're going to get. And when you only go to the line 9 times and your opponent goes 31 times, you know, you can't really win basketball games that way.
Tough to win a basketball game with that. Next three games, let's kind of group together a little bit. I think that's probably fair.
That's fair.
You've got home against Oakland, home against North Florida, home against Niagara. All three of those are wins. All three of them good wins, not the most impressive things in the world, but certainly solid wins for Syracuse.
They did what they needed to do, and the thing with this stretch of games was just you have to win them all, because one loss in this stretch, and I know it's a terrible stretch and it's just a weak statement to make, but one loss is truly the end of the season. And they did the job. I don't think any of these wins were necessarily pretty, besides maybe that Niagara game. There were some moments in those Oakland game and that North Florida game where you were still kind of like,
I was worried.
You can tell why this team has struggled and is off to the worst start under Jim Boeheim. It made sense, but they were able to get the job done. They were able to figure out enough, and at the end of the day, they got the three wins, and that's what you needed out of that stretch.
Especially the North Florida game. That game was concerning.
They were down.
Because you had JT Escobar just firing up threes like nobody's business. I mean, worried a little bit, but like you said, Syracuse takes care of business in those three.
Yeah, you know, I like the wins. You know, you can't get mad at the wins. Yeah. But at the same time, like you guys said, you know, Oakland's making runs. North Florida's taking the lead. This team seems to just switch off in 3-4 minute stints. Mm-hmm. And it's cost them games. It's not going to cost them against Oakland, North Florida, or Niagara, but some of the games that we're about to talk about, it has cost them games that they've played well for a majority of it, and then they turn off, they can't score, and they give up a ton of points, and all of a sudden they can't come back.
Let's dive a little bit deeper into the last three games, spend some more time on these. Yeah. Let's start with the January 4th home game against Notre Dame. This game, it's not a good loss. You never want to call something a good loss, but it's just heartbreaking because it felt like Syracuse had this game in the palm of their hands, and then John Mooney happened.
Yeah, John Mooney happens in the second half, and one of my biggest kind of takeaways to hit on before that is this game kind of showed the fact that Syracuse had not played a close game all season. Every single game they had played up to Notre Dame was decided by 10 or more points, whether it was a win or a loss. So this was Syracuse's, and a very young Syracuse, first exposure to a close basketball game, a tough ACC game, where you're going back and forth down the stretch, where you've got a lead, you've got to keep a lead, or you're down by a couple, you've got to regain the lead and come back. They have not had that experience as a group too much this season, and at all this season, for that matter. I mean, when you look at the preseason, when you look at the tour over in Italy, they have not played a close game, whether it was in their favor or they were getting blown out. They don't have that experience yet, and it showed a little bit against Notre Dame. And as we said before, it was just the curse of Syracuse playing really good bigs this season and not being able to do anything. John Mooney did what John Mooney does. He was an all-ACC guy last season. He is a top player. He's a really strong player. And I thought they were going to have something for him, something for him. And it, once again, there was just nothing in the tank, nothing in the back pocket, nothing hidden up the sleeve. And he goes off and just does, I mean, what you've seen him do for his entire career at Notre Dame, but he does what he needed to do, and he gets the win for Notre Dame.
Oh, and at the end of the game, foul or no foul?
I'll tell you, My thought was no foul on Girard. I thought Hughes got fouled on his three attempt with, I think, 4 or 5 seconds left.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't think the Girard foul was a foul.
And they're never going to call that. Like, who's going to make that call? Whether he was fouled or not, he threw his legs out a little bit. Uh-huh. Like, he was trying to get it, which I understand. You got
to
get every call.
I have to.
Right there, you're searching
crazy
for
he made
the
three.
Buzzer.
Like,
oh, yeah.
I was very impressed
Unbelievable
by that.
Shot from Girard.
But, yeah, I mean, kind of a perfect ending that Mooney was able to put the tip in because we, you know, we just had nothing for him or they had nothing for him. Really, the entire game. The one big positive I take out of it, maybe making it a good win, is I really thought that Mark Dolezal started to, you know, really understand a role in that game.
Yeah,
he's becoming much better passer. Maybe what a lot of people thought he was going to be when he made that little run to take the job from Matthew Moyer in his freshman year, and he was playing in the tournament. He was showing some pretty good level passing there, and now in a couple ACC games, he's gone, you know, 7 assists in this one. I think he had 8 assists. Against Virginia. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he is really starting to become a bigger factor in the offense. And that's what the Syracuse team has missed for a long time, is a big that can play a legitimate role, not just, you know, score when they're open. They can actually contribute to the offense. So I was impressed by Dolezal.
And in terms of good loss, you've got 5 players in double figures.
Right.
Where have we seen that this season out of Syracuse? Boeheim leads scoring or leads SU with 23, Girard with 20, Hughes with 19, Dolezal with 13, and Guerrier with 10. It's been a distributed offense that you haven't really seen this season. So that is a really strong takeaway to have and something that they can build on moving forward, and they have a little bit already. So it's a loss, no question about it, and it's a game that you wish you had back because the ACC is down, but your Notre Dame games are your very winnable games in the ACC. They're your freer games in terms of getting to that north of 500 record that Syracuse is going to need if they want to be in any tournament conversation at the end of the year. It's a game that they needed back, but at the end of the day, they can build off this, and they have a little bit already, and I'm curious to see where that distributive scoring can pop up again and if they're going to be able to do that on a higher frequency.
Notre Dame currently sitting at just 1-4 in the conference.
Yeah.
So that's a game you should win.
And they've got the redemption game
coming up
in a couple, or in a week or so, yeah. 1 week from today. But they've got the opportunity. Let's see if they've made those adjustments, if they can hold Mooney in check, if they can figure those things out. Because once again, Virginia Tech, that second game against VT, and that second game against Notre Dame, both of those on the road, but both very winnable games.
And we hit on it a little bit with John Mooney, but I think this game might have exposed the single biggest weakness on this Syracuse basketball team, which is who is guarding a big man.
Yeah.
Because you've got Barama Sidibe, who he's a professional fouler. That's just what he does.
Well
he is
said.
In the game to record personal fouls.
Well said.
I said this at the beginning of the year. When I had my start Jesse Edwards take, Sidibe has not shown me anything that says I can do something other than foul. He has flashes here and there, but it's so inconsistent that he just it's frustrating to watch because he just fouls like it's nobody's business. And then you've got Quincy Guerrier, who I think could potentially start at the 5, but he's not a natural 5. He's a natural 4. Mm-hmm. And even he's fouling a lot, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got 4 personal fouls in this game against Notre Dame. He had, what, 4?
He had fouled out against Virginia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
he's had some foul trouble.
He had 4 against Virginia. So,
correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not 100% sure on this, but I am pretty sure in his last, it's between 4 and 6 games, he has had 4 or more fouls every game.
Probably.
He cannot get into the second half out of foul trouble. And it puts this team in such a tough spot. Ben and I were talking before we got on the show. I think Dolezal, he's played well this season, and I'm not going to take that away from him. But I think he's being held back consistently because you have to take him out of his natural position so frequently. And that puts more fouls on him because he's guarding guys that are bigger and stronger than he is. So he's got to pick up fouls, and it takes him out of the game. And he's been the best big man for Syracuse. Not that he is a big, but the best forward or center for Syracuse and kind of in that flex spot, he's been the best guy for them down there. And to have to take him and put him at the 5, to put him in the middle of the 2-3, and to put him on opponents' bigs and the guys that I mean, he's a big dude. He's got, I mean, at least height-wise, he's competitive height-wise with most of the guys he's defending, but he is not a big. That's why he's playing the four and not the five. You need Sidibe to come in there and play some competent minutes and stay out of foul trouble so that Dolezal can play the position he knows, because that's where he's excelled and that's where he can really step up and help this team. You said he can distribute. That's one of his best things and his best assets. He can't necessarily distribute as well from the five, and it shows. When you can let him play that four and do his thing and play that flex role where he is able to do both, he's much more beneficial for Syracuse. He's more helpful to this offense, and he could be the key to Syracuse getting hot.
And that's honestly why I'd start Guerrier at the five. I know he's out of position there, but look at this Notre Dame game. Guerrier plays 18 minutes. He scores 10 points compared to Sidibe's two. He has three blocks compared to Sidibe's one. Yes, he still has four personal fouls, but the thing I loved about Guerrier in this game is, yes, Quincy Guerrier will make some mistakes. Mm-hmm. But say what you will about those mistakes, they are all aggressive.
Yeah.
And he goes on the floor and he plays harder than I think anybody else on this team. He is making aggressive mistakes. And if you're going to make mistakes as a freshman, as he should be doing, well, not should be doing, but is expected of him as a freshman, I would so much prefer for Quincy Guerrier to be on the floor making aggressive mistakes than having a junior Barama Sidibe go out there and just foul like it's his day job.
Yeah, I think Guerrier is really the no-brainer. I guess it looks a little unconventional, but you can play Guerrier and Dolezal beside each other, and then you're getting, I mean, Guerrier, I would assume, weighs more than Sidibe does.
He does. Yeah, Quincy Guerrier is the heaviest player on the team. At like 220.
Yeah, and he at least looks like he would be the best at jump balls. He's probably the most athletic guy. I kind of want him in the middle of the court, both on offense and defense. Like, I like what he gives from an inside perspective on offense, considering we don't have a ton of guys with a great handle down there. He's struggled a bit from three. He should still shoot threes, but, you know, if you're shooting under 20% from beyond the arc, you may as well get down there, bang some bodies. He's bigger than a lot of guys, even as a freshman. And he kind of reminds you of O'Shea Brissett, not to play on the Canadian-to-Canadian 6'7", 6'8", guy too much. But they have a similar body type, and I think he could use his body down there like O'Shea used to and really leverage the threes or fours or even fives that are guarding
him. The best comp between those is just they both have plays where they'll sky for a rebound from off the screen when you're watching it on TV. It's just out of nowhere. They've got that ability to just come from behind and jump and get up there and grab a rebound basically out of the blue, out of nowhere, that you weren't even expecting them to be in the discussion for getting that board, and they just pop up there. And that's what you need him to do, and that's what he can do because of that ability. And he's got that kind of unparalleled athleticism on this team. The talent, obviously, very raw. His basketball skills are a little bit raw. He's not quite where you'd want him to be, obviously. But at the end of the day, that sheer athleticism can help him kind of replace Sidibe if you want to put him in the five, because he's going to be able to get boards and battle. And, Brendan, you hit that point right on the just perfectly. What you'd want out of him, yes, we understand that he's going to make mistakes. Most freshmen do. It happens. It's part of the game. It's part of the growth. That's why you take that step in between high school and the pros. You go to college to kind of refine those skills. He's going to take some time, but what he can do is he just does his job. He goes aggressively. Sometimes it doesn't work perfectly, and that's okay. But he's going to grow. He's going to be able to find that stride. He's going to figure out this role even more, and that's going to be something that Syracuse is going to need to figure out, because once again, you want Dolezal to be able to flex a little bit more. You want him to be able to do his thing, and he can't do his thing when he has to be picking up the slack of Barama Sidibe game in and game out.
One thing to note here for this Notre Dame game, this is the first game that we see a continuous trend of all Howard Washington, no Bryson Goodine.
Yeah.
Bryson Goodine has not played since the Niagara game. Something to keep in mind. Let's move on to the Virginia Tech game. Again, another tough loss for Syracuse, only a four-point loss. And the Orange are up 33-27 in the first half, get outscored by Virginia Tech 40-30 in the second. Oh. Tough to kind of pinpoint one specific problem in this one.
This one hurt.
Just all around.
This was the one you look back on with some question marks. Because it felt like they were, and not felt like, I mean, score-wise, they were in the driver's seat the entire game. And then with about 10 minutes left, it just kind of went awry, and they could not find that stride. We kind of touched upon it early on. They've got this kind of cancerous ability to just turn off at points where you've got nothing going and you just go into lulls, where when you look at this score sheet from 9:48 to down to 7 minutes, they go 2-3 minutes without scoring any points. And in that time, Virginia takes over the lead. Yeah, they blow the lead in that time frame, and it just goes from there. That's what they've struggled to do. They've got to get that cutthroat aspect. It was still, you know, that inexperience in these close games, and this one really just showed the inexperience. They needed someone to step up down the stretch, and they really just didn't. And, I mean, it reflects in the score. When you're leading the entire game and comfortably leading the entire game, and then just instantly you forget how to play basketball. You're not doing the little things that you were doing all game. You go a little bit cold from the field, which is going to happen when you've got a team that's heavily reliant on threes. But that's why you need to develop that interior a little bit more. You've got to have that second tier, that second card, that second move that you can do, which would be something more inside and getting the ball inside out and some of those other aspects that this team is not necessarily accustomed to doing.
Yeah, and I think to a certain extent they were living on the edge. I mean, mm-hmm. Virginia Tech was missing a lot more three-pointers than is really representative.
Yeah.
Leonard Snolley is one of the best shooters in the conference, maybe in the country, and he went 1 for 11. But it's the mental mistakes that really hurt me. You know, like you said, Quincy Guerrier makes aggressive mistakes. He goes in and he might lose the ball on a drive, but he's driving hard. You can't foul the same three-point shooter twice in 2 minutes. Like, you're asking him to make 2 4-point plays. Like, you know, one time you leave your feet, but you have to know, you know, from the same spot, I believe, too. They were both right around, like, the 45 on the right side. Like, he just – you can't foul a three-point shooter, let him convert a 4-point play. That starts a run. They hit a couple shots, and then you hit him again, and they take the lead. And, you know, this team, like you said – they kind of fold sometimes for a couple minutes, and the way they play, they don't want to be playing from behind. We don't score a ton of points. Traditionally, they want to play solid defense, and when you're in front by 9 points with 11 minutes left, you can't blow that lead against Virginia Tech at home.
And this was a massive opportunity. I mean, this is a Virginia Tech team who is now 4-2 in the ACC and 13-4 overall. This is a really good Virginia Tech team that you caught on an off day. They did not play well. They shot 28% from three and 70% from the line. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Syracuse was doing things in this game that they never do. No. They won the battle in the paint.
Yeah.
That Syracuse was scores 28 points in the paint in this game compared to 14 for Virginia Tech, 11 second chance points for the Orange, 5 for the Hokies. This is a game Syracuse had in the palm of their hand.
Yeah, they had the blessing of Virginia Tech being ice cold, basically, the first 30 minutes of the game. You've got to jump on them there, and they didn't. And you know what? On Saturday, they play Virginia Tech again, and are they going to have that same benefit?
Probably not.
Ice cold?
I would bet
probably
not.
At Virginia Tech as well, where Virginia Tech is 9-1 at home.
Yeah.
And you've got this game, too. One of the biggest problems for Syracuse, I think, is you've got these stretches where if Elijah Hughes and Buddy Boeheim are cold, if they're not hitting shots for a few minutes, everyone just kind of looks around and is like, do you want the ball? I don't want the ball. Who
gets into that passive state that you saw last year with Tyus Battle and Frank Howard and O'Shea, where you weren't necessarily distributing. It was that more iso ball type, dribble drives type, just hold the ball until there's 3 seconds on the shot clock and then, oh, let's throw one up. It doesn't work. And they kind of can fall into that lull at times this season, especially when Hughes and Boeheim aren't scoring. What they can still do, Boeheim especially, and Hughes has established himself as a premier shooter in the ACC. He's really stepped up this season, and I think he's shot the ball incredibly well throughout the entire season. They both draw a heavy eye from the defense. And if nothing else, if they're not hitting their shots, they're still going to get that shooting credit. They're still going to get that extra look, that extra kind of half step closer to them. And in doing that, they can create so much space for the other guys. So there needs to be that ability to have Gerard step up in that situation. If you can get the ball moving a little bit more when those two aren't playing well, that could be the key to your success, that key to finding a third scorer that's going to be a little bit more consistent. I think it is Gerard who's going to be that third scorer who has shown himself as the third scorer, but it doesn't need to be him every time. There are other options. You've seen Guerrier do it. You've seen Dolezal do it. You've got to be able to let them get more involved, especially in those kind of lulls where you've seen, like those first half Buddy Boeheim situations we talked about and those second half Elijah Hughes situations we talked about. When those two aren't necessarily both hot, you've got to be able to find other options, and that's something that Syracuse will need to do because the easier part of the ACC schedule only has about a week and a half left, and then you kind of hit the ringer in February where you're playing that backloaded ACC schedule that Syracuse seems to run into every year.
And let's throw some more wood on the fire for my Quincy Guerrier argument in this Virginia Tech game. 12 points, 9 rebounds. Yeah. Yes, 4 personal fouls, but so did Barama Sidibe with 4 personal fouls, and he only had 5 points and 9 boards. Quincy Guerrier, 2020. All right. So if you were to look at this 3-game stretch of Notre Dame, Virginia Tech, Virginia, and you said, hey, I've got a magic 8-ball. Syracuse is winning one of these basketball games. You'd be like,
Notre Dame.
All right. You'd probably say Notre Dame at home. Syracuse goes to Virginia and beats the defending national champions in their house for the first time since 2007. That was freshman Johnny Flynn.
Wow. What a guy.
What a guy, Johnny.
The reason I got into Syracuse.
Syracuse with a 63-55 win over Virginia. I mean, I think Tim Leonard said it best when he was calling this game. He said, quote, "These two basketball teams are allergic to scoring."
They really
They're
are.
They're allergic to offense.
Yeah, and that's, in my opinion, why, I mean, Virginia undoubtedly a better basketball team than Syracuse. They showed that the first game. They've shown that by having opponents average under 50 points per game against them. But the one thing that I've noticed about them is because of their inabilities offensively, they are very vulnerable if you can find ways to score.
Incredibly.
And Syracuse showed that. Syracuse by no means played a great offensive game, but they did the job. And they shot off in overtime. And it was just that characteristic. Syracuse is going to win games they have no business winning.
Right.
And they're going to lose games.
I knew there was going to be one. I knew there was going to be one.
Always one. And you know what? Who knows? Because last season you go from losing to Georgia Tech to beating Duke on the road, the lows to the highs to the lows. I have a feeling there are going to be a few more of those games that turn out in the opposite direction for Syracuse, whether it's a loss where they should win.
Probably lose at home to Georgia Tech, if we're being honest.
They could lose at home to Georgia Tech, and you know what? I bet you they can knock off someone.
Probably.
Someone.
It's a Syracuse thing.
It's pretty open ACC, though. Like we were talking about it before. You know, if Syracuse had a slightly better roster this year, they might really be able to make a run at this thing. Like,
right.
There are, you know, Syracuse demolishes Georgia Tech, who then goes and beats UNC. Duke loses to Clemson. Like,
it's up in
no
the air.
One is safe right now. I have no idea who's going to win the ACC. I want to say it's Duke, but it could be Louisville. It could be Florida State still.
Yeah.
So I really think that we will pick up, or Syracuse will pick up, a couple exciting wins this year, but definitely will have their fair share of Syracuse losses.
And would it not be the most Syracuse thing to kind of catch its stride down the season?
Oh, would be.
They're going to win 3 ACC tournament games, and now it's like, oh, they're back on the bubble. Just
welcome
be
home,
in or
sweet
out.
Prince.
Just be in or out for once. For once.
It's never going to happen.
Give me a comfortable selection Sunday. Let me understand what's going on here. Because it's always chaos. And that's what's fun about Syracuse in these past couple of years, despite not being at the height that they once were and being atop the ACC or the top few in the ACC. And that all happened kind of in that early 2010s, the last decade. We did a decade in review post-game after one of those games. I think it was the Niagara game and just kind of the chaos that was the 2010s for Syracuse basketball.
Right.
They've gone from the highs. They're now in that lull. But despite the lulls, there are always fun games. There are always big wins. And so that's kind of what you've become accustomed to. And it's death taxes in Syracuse being on the tournament bubble the past 5 years. Your guarantees in life. And I don't know. Maybe this is the year where they're not. But it's Syracuse.
I think there's definitely a chance they make the run. Yeah. I mean, if you watched overtime of this Virginia game, mm-hmm. you would believe that at least for moments they can turn it on. I mean, to outscore themselves from in overtime compared to what they scored in the second half is just ridiculous and like really kind of a microcosm of what this team is.
Yeah,
but they have guys who can make plays. They're just not consistent, unfortunately. Yeah. If Gerard Hughes and Boeheim are all on, which they were at the same time in kind of a perfect storm in that overtime, they're a pretty scary team to go after. I mean, we haven't seen them shoot and transition that confidently. We haven't seen them really move the ball. Like, they weren't thinking. They were just playing offense for the first time in a while when it looks a lot like someone's dribbling back and forth and going, ugh, like, I see nothing, or, like, what are we doing here? We need to get it to Elijah. Instead, they were just running out in transition, putting up shots, and taking shots, giving it to the open guy, and it was really fun basketball. I will say I do find this team in ways more fun to watch than the team last year, even though the team last year was better.
I think it kind of just reminded me of, like, you know, the Syracuse basketball team just showed up to, like, a pickup game at the Y. They were having fun.
Right.
They were just playing their game, doing nothing out of the ordinary. They weren't struggling to, like, find the defensive scheme or to figure things out offensively. They were just playing, and it worked. And if they can do that for a little bit longer and just have those moments of fun basketball and playing the game that you grew up to love and that's why you're playing at this level, they can do this. They have the ability. They've shown it throughout. They've got those peaks. They've got those glimpses into what Syracuse basketball could be. They've got to be able to find that consistency aspect. And if they can, then I think without a doubt they'll be on that bubble. They could be in the tournament. They could be out. But they have the ability. They can control their own destiny from this point on, I think.
A lot of positives in this one for Syracuse. I think all things considered, this might have been one of, if not the best game out of Joe Girard we've seen this year.
The Seattle game,
I get it, but it's Seattle.
That was different.
In this Virginia game, he's playing against Kihei Clark, who is one of the best defensive guards in the nation. Mm-hmm. And as a whole, Virginia is the best defensive team in the country, far and away. But, oh, and you said death taxes and Syracuse being on the bubble the last 5 years. This season, death taxes and Syracuse not being able to guard a big man.
Yeah.
Jay Huff with 16 and 10. Uh-huh. Jay Huff is not a scorer. Jay Huff goes for 16 and 10. Mm-hmm. Mamadi Diakite, 13 and 8. Syracuse just can't guard anybody in the paint. And I think we've touched on every game from Georgia Tech on December 7th, to now Virginia on January 11th. And if we were to, if I were to wrap it in a bow a little bit and just some general takeaways, I'd say, number one, I think Joe Girard has really established himself as the number three option on this team.
Yeah.
I think Girard, you kind of – it's interesting because the expectations for Girard at the beginning of this year were to be a spark piece off the bench, and now he's the number three option and a quality starting point guard at this point.
Yeah.
So I think Girard has played really well over this stretch that we've been talking about, and I think he's really established himself. Number two – Dolezal really found his role.
Yeah.
Ben touched on it a little bit as well. Dolezal has been playing really well. And the big negative, number three, there's just no big man defense. Mm-hmm. There is no option at the five position right now that Jim Boeheim can look at and say, that's it.
I mean, you're talking Jay Huff. He had 8 offensive rebounds. Like, I don't think the game plan was to play Jay Huff for 41 minutes.
Oh,
like,
absolutely not.
He went out there and, you know, he looked like Shaq. Like, he was he was dominating the inside. So I think I like, you know, bring Gary in there, mix it up. I mean, not to be pessimistic, but it can't get that much worse, the interior defense and the defensive rebounding. So you may as well try some guys. And I think one of the biggest takeaways that you mentioned earlier is, what is Bryson good on? Like, what is he going to do this year? What are we expecting out of him? Right now, it looks like not a whole lot. And
literally nothing.
Yeah.
If the last three games have been any indication,
we
will be seeing literally nothing from Bryson Goodine.
And you know, he's our only ESPN 100 recruit, so he came in with a little bit of expectation. I'd like to see us go a little deeper just because we have these cold stretches and maybe some of the guys off the bench can help out, especially with Braswell going out. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I do agree with you that we're probably not going to see a lot of Bryson Goodine, which disappoints me because I was hoping that he would maybe come out and be one of our best freshmen this year.
Jim Boeheim has expressed his ideas in the past that you've got however many media timeouts plus four more timeouts from each side plus halftime. You don't need that many guys to come off the bench. You can run with seven, and per his statistical analysis, most guys don't go more than eight, or most teams don't run more than eight. So he's doing nothing wrong, and I don't think that you're going to see a change out of him, but I do think that kind of as you look at this schedule and as you look ahead, Syracuse has, once again, control of its own destiny. BC, Virginia Tech, Notre Dame, Pittsburgh are your next four, plus Clemson coming off a big win against Duke last night.
Right.
But once again, not the greatest team. You've got, they're all outside the top 50 per Ken Pom. You've got options to kind of get those padding wins for when you do have to play the top tier of the ACC, which you've been able to avoid outside of Virginia. But, I mean, Virginia is still, as we were saying before the show, they're a bubble team in the tournament right now.
Yeah, Bracketology
has them
as last four in. They're the third team as last four in. Bracketology is, I wouldn't say slandering because they're not that good, but they are really going after the ACC right now. Only four ACC teams were included in Joe Lunardi's latest Bracketology. They had 11 from the Big Ten. So it's really been a wild year in college basketball. But yeah, you know, January is really the safe haven for Syracuse. Yeah. They need to pick up as many January wins as possible because from February 1st to February 19th, they're going to play Duke, Florida, go at Florida State and at Louisville. NC State's a pretty tough game, too.
I'm going to say you got to win four or five. And I know it's a big ask, and five of five, obviously, best case. But I think you have to win four or five to keep the season alive. If you go 3-2 and you're now sitting at 12-9 on the season with your tough half of the ACC waiting ahead, I don't know if they've got the abilities to come back from that. If you can go 4-1 and kind of have that 13-8 record where you've got the ability to win a handful more and get as close to that 20-win margin as possible, you're going to be able to have a shot down the stretch where you could win a couple of ACC games and propel yourself in. But you've got to get four of these five. I think if you lose two in this five-game stretch, then you can write the season off unless something drastic changes and they pull something out of a hat as if it's a rabbit from a magician's cap.
So let's talk about this game tonight a little bit. We're recording this on Wednesday morning. Boston College coming to town tonight. This is a must-win. Right? I mean, Boston College is 9-7 overall, which, as I say out loud, yes, Syracuse is also 9-7, but I think Boston College is a worse 9-7 than Syracuse
is. Boston College is 159 on Ken Pom's rankings right now.
Boston College, not that good. And they're coming to the Carrier Dome with Nick Popovich and Derek Thornton out, who are their two best players, arguably. I mean, two of their best players, if not their two best. So this is a must-win.
It really is.
You hate to say a must-win on January 15th, but
in the context of the tournament, it's definitely
it's what it
you
is.
Need
yeah.
it. It would be a bad loss. I mean, you know, they're 11-point favorites right now. Like, people think Syracuse should win this basketball game. If Popovich is there, it's a different story. But without him, you know, there really shouldn't be anything standing in the way of Syracuse dominating this game.
This is the telltale game for Syracuse. They've dug themselves a hole, don't get me wrong, but they have not, you know, lost the ladder yet. The ladder is still sitting right next to them. They can climb out of it. If they drop this game, the ladder is basically going kaboom because you can't get out of the hole if you drop this one. This is the must win. If you drop this game on a tournament resume, you're in trouble. The one thing Syracuse does have going for them is despite losing seven games, they don't necessarily have a bad loss. So they can move on from that. If you drop this game, this is a bad loss. And that's the one that is going to be tough to come back from. You can't do it. You've got to win tonight. They're 11-point favorites. They should win tonight. The question is, will they? I think so, but you never know.
Leading into that Virginia game, Syracuse really didn't have any big wins, but they also, like you said, didn't have any big losses.
They just did what they should.
They got a big win.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, last week at Virginia, say what you will about this Virginia team right now, that's still a defending national champions that Syracuse has not beat on the road since 2007. Virginia's still 11-4 overall, 3-2 in the ACC. now 8-2 at home. That's still a really good Virginia team. They're the best defensive team in the country. That's a quality win for Syracuse.
And does Syracuse not just have Virginia's number for no reason, even in this lull, when you've got the Elite Eight win, the come-from-behind win, Jim Boeheim's 1,000th loss handed to an opponent?
Yeah.
Was another like 10-point comeback, and then this one, Syracuse is not a good basketball team right now, and they come out and beat the number one defensive team in the country. It makes no sense, but at the same time, it makes sense, which is the best thing about this team. And as you were saying, it's that key win that they've needed. They didn't have anything necessarily good or anything necessarily bad on the resume. They just existed. It was I think Frankie Vernowski, when he came on, he said not overwhelming or underwhelming.
Whelming.
Just whelming.
Whelming, I think, was the exact way that Frankie put it.
Just whelming. And that was Syracuse to this point. And now they've got a nice win, and they can start to kind of boost that resume up and boost themselves up and propel themselves forward. And, you know, it's the start of what could be an entertaining stretch for the ACC play.
By the time that this podcast is on next week, I think we'll either be talking about the ship sailing into open waters or the ship sailing directly into a giant rock.
Maybe into an iceberg.
Maybe an iceberg. We'll see. Syracuse taking on Boston College tonight, travels to Virginia Tech on Saturday. We'll be back sometime next week to discuss both of those with you. For Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman, I am Brendan Mortensen. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll catch you next time.